You may, on the other hand, regard them as rational, nay, as rationality itself, as things so obviously reasonable that they neither demand nor admit proof. But then you must allow that reason can be practical, that an ought must not be dismissed because it cannot produce some is as its credential. If nothing is self-evident, nothing can be proved. Similarly, if nothing is obligatory for its own sake, nothing is obligatory at all.
Oh.
Okay.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Would you make an example with ought and is?
Okay. That an ought must not be dismissed because it cannot produce an is credential. To say that I ought to be just, okay, cannot be dismissed if it cannot produce some is as a credential. Prove it. In other words, remember all the talk we've been saying about prove the ought. You can't prove the ought by pointing to this and this and this and this, therefore you ought to die for your country. See? There is not an is, a fact, other than if you take the Tao itself as a fact, that you can get to the ought.
Ought is just understood ought.
Uh-huh. And if you do accept the ought, the Tao, then you cannot dismiss an ought, because it does not prove an is credential. This is the one, the page that went off in my head when I was a senior. An ought must not be dismissed because it cannot produce some is credential. Now this is that's a restatement of everything we've been saying before, so if we don't get it, we've got to kind of, okay, we're stuck again then.
What are you doing about this?
Okay. Well, how far back do we have to go?
13.
Page 13, eh?
I saw you looking back or something.
These questions have been a little rough.
I've been lost ever since the axiom came in.
Well, that's how you spell the page.
Well, just erase everything that we were saying when we ran the page.
Okay. Okay, we've got, okay, he's saying we've got, he says,
no.
It says these are to the world of action, doing. I should do this, I should do that, and so forth. What axioms are to the world of theory, be not necessarily mathematics, but mathematics is part of that. I don't know enough about mathematics to get.
But what are?
Hmm?
These are. What are these?
Humanity is to be preserved. That's an ought.
All the practical principles.
That's one of the ought.
Okay, back.
All men are my brothers, and I ought to have that attitude.
Okay.
That sentiment. I ought to have that.
And that's not something to be challenged.
And it's not something to be challenged.
Okay.
Okay. But it's not to be, it's like without question as being to the world of action too. You're not questioning that they are that way, like the axiom, okay? You cannot reach them as conclusions, they are premises. Now we know that you can't reach them as conclusions, don't we? That we know. He shown that a couple times now. We can't reach them as conclusions. And yet we have to accept them. So they must be sort of super premises. You may, since they can give no reason for themselves. They can't give you a reason. Of a kind to silence Gaius and Titius, you may regard them as sentiments. Because they cannot be reached as conclusions. They are premises, but they cannot give reason for themselves. They're the sort of basic truths. So but we can't prove them normally what we call talk of as reason. So we can regard them as sentiments, which is exactly really where Lewis wants to get us, because he wants to get us down into the chest, get us out of just the head, get us down in there into the chest. You can regard them as sentiments, but then you must give up contrasting real or rational value with sentimental value. Okay. All value will be sentimental, because all value cannot be concluded. If you say that you have, because of that, you have to call them sentiments, you have to give up making some kind of a distinction between, oh, those are sentimental values, and these are the real values. Because all values will be sentimental, if you decide to use that word. Now, does that follow? All value will be sentimental, and you must confess on pain of abandoning every value. Now, he says that because if you... all value will be sentimental, and you must confess on pain of abandoning every value that all sentiment is not merely subjective. Because if you say that this one value is merely subjective, on that same grounds you start tear down all values. You just destroy the whole thing. What looks through lead looks through gold. I mean, it's sort of, if you use this, if you reject the one, you reject them all. All value will be sentimental, and you must confess on pain of abandoning every value that all sentiment is not merely subjective.
Okay,
okay. All value will be sentimental, and you must confess that all sentiment is not merely subjective.
So in other words, some sentiment is objective. You have to confess that some sentiment is objective?
And that's
you must confess that there is an objective reality, as these statements of the Tao. All value will be sentimental, and you must confess that all sentiment is not merely subjective, because if you do say that all sentiment is merely subjective, you make that separation that we began with, you destroy value.
Okay.
That's how we began, right?
Is there any?
Now, if you say, okay, but these six values are merely subjective and not really values. By the same argument that I'll make to show that, I wipe out all values, all the rest of them. There's a domino effect. You mess with one, you start messing, You mess with one from the outside, you wipe them all out. And that he eloquently says on the next page.
Is it okay to say that some sentiment is objective? Or is there something wrong with saying that? To understand
the sentiments.
He says, and you must confess that all sentiment is not merely subjective. So then is it okay to say, and you must confess that some sentiment is objective? Is that okay, or am I making an error there?
I don't know if you'd I haven't flipped it over like that, so it's a strange idea that I'd want to think about for a while.
But the thing is that the sentiment,
remember, the sentiment is the attitude. It's the attitude which is in conforms with objective reality that is accepted. Okay, the sentiments of the Tao. I mean, not the sentiments of the Tao, the sayings of the Tao. If I accept those as oughts, that I ought to feel that way, those are the valuable attitudes to have. There is value outside of myself. That is what I'm saying. Those are valuable in themselves. Okay. Now, if I can get my attitudes to conform with them, then I am in harmony.
Okay.
That's how he's using objective. So is the sentiment itself objective? It says, because if I have them, if I believe that, then I am saying that there is an objective reality out there, and my attitudes are in harmony with that. So there, it isn't just a subjective thing. It's an objective thing.
So talking about in terms of objective reality, this does make more sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just kind of wasn't sure if I was following through to understand it, but...
It's so much fun. When you guys are reading this, you get on it. You know, it's sort of like you're riding a little trike, you know, on a real narrow thing, and you get it, and I got it. You know, like in Laughing, that little guy.
Yeah.
He falls over. And it happened. You get up, and the next time you read it, you can make it a little farther. The next time you read it, you can't even make it past word go. You know, you start, and you fall over right away. And pretty soon it gets easier, you know, I mean, you start to recognize it more and more. But I hear I've done this many times, and I get, I get tired doing this, because I have to rethink these thoughts each time, and it's really... Okay, you may, on the other hand, regard them as rational, nay, as rationality itself. Now, he says you may, on the other hand, because he says you may call them sentiments, and if you do, you know what you're saying, this down, you know, everything that we've just talked about. And you may, on the other hand, say that they're rational. But if you say that they're rational, it's not the normal kind of rational, it's rationality itself. It's rationality itself.
How come?
It's a different kind of rationality. Because if you want to say they're rational, it isn't the other kind of rational. It's a new kind of rational. In other words, if those aren't accepted, I really can't be rational. At least rationality, rational statements about why we do things is possible only by accepting those.
What
therefore,
those
the Tao, the statements of the Tao, is value. It's not possible anyway. If the only rationality comes from accepting those, and then I can't rationally ask people to do things proceeding from that accepted value. And so in a sense that I can't rationally ask anybody to do anything without this, therefore he chooses the word rationality itself. Now that's as far as I can go on understanding why he says it that. Okay. Things are so obvious, obviously reasonable that they neither demand or admit proof. But then you must allow that reason can be practical.
What?
Practical is the I'm glad you're being honest. Really, I am. Come on, you guys, lie. I want to get to the next page. Okay, but... okay, but then you must allow that reason. Okay, but then you must allow that reason can be practical. Boy, and one is that they use these terms. Other places where he uses practical, it's ought. I mean, that you can produce an ought. A practical statement is to say an ought. Okay, so it's what does he mean? But then you must allow that.
Just because there's no proof that it's not a rational thing, that it's not something that's
silly.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's because it's this, that reason can say that you ought to do something. Okay? That reason can say that you ought to do something. It is reasonable to say that you ought to do something, even though the ought, well, not even though, I say the reason can be used to say that you ought to do something, that you should do something, and that an ought must not be dismissed because it cannot produce some is as its credential. That the reason cannot be practical without granting the ought. That we've already said, haven't we?
Reason
cannot be practical without granting the ought. Reason cannot lead you to an ought statement without granting the ought. Okay? Yeah, actually what we're doing is like that paragraph I read in Plato, you know, that I spent 4 hours on one paragraph. Well, that's what we're doing here now. Okay. Reason cannot... Okay, let me try it again. Boy, I shouldn't have made the digression. I lost my... my trike fell over. Reason can... be... no. Reason can be practical. Can... the reason can be used to say you ought to do something.
I just don't understand how that sentence fits with the sentence before it.
But you can just allow that reason can be practical. But then, when you say that it's rationality itself, on the other hand, regard them as rational, those are rational, and as rational, as rational, then reason can be used to lead to should questions, and the oughts that are used in that reasoning should not be dismissed because it cannot produce an is as credential. Well, he's hitting so many things here, and I'm wondering why he's saying them. You may, on the other hand, regard them as rational, and as rationality itself.
No,
as
I
think
don't
so.
Regard them as rational.
Don't you? Okay. You regard them as that? No. You know what I regard them as? Okay.
A bunch of
blank
squiggles.
Yeah. But then you must allow that reason can be practical. That's an odd lesson. Reason can... if you accept those as rational, then reason can cause you to say, to say, turn the next page, and I'll come back after supper and tell you what this sucker means, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that might be smart, because maybe
okay.
We're getting stuck.
I think we are stuck, because...
maybe,
I'm not sure.
Do you believe it? No, I'll never get it back.
No, you won't.
Yeah, you will.
No, you won't.
Because
you
probably
might
get
a fresh
insight.
Oh,
well.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole thing.
We'll go back.
Knock her off her trike quick and we'll go.
I'm
okay.
Trying.
Wham.
You're gone.
Okay. Okay. We do know the basic thing.
No, we'll come back quick.
We do know the basic stuff.
I don't understand.
That an ought must not be dismissed.
But right now, the more I think about it, the less I understand.
Sorry. Yes. Okay. All right. Let me come back to that. If you still have a question, I'll bang it away. I'll look at it during supper, and then we'll come back at it tonight. To some, it will appear that I have merely restored under another name what they always meant by basic fundamental instinct, but much more than a choice of words is involved. The innovator attacks traditional values, the Tao, in defense of what he at first supposes to be, in some special case, rational or biological values. We have seen all values which he uses in attacking the Tao and even claims to be substituting for it are themselves derived from the Tao. If he had really, as we saw, the values that he was seeking were already in the Tao all along. Okay.
Then couldn't you quote his argument right there?
Who? couldn't Lewis?
Yeah.
No, because
he's only done that guy wrong.
Yeah, but that isn't his only point. That's just one of his things he wants to do.
That's one part.
Mm. That's one thing. Mm. Even claims for substance are themselves derived from the Tao. If he had really started from scratch, from right outside the human tradition of value, no jugglery could have advanced him an inch toward the conception that a man should die for the community or work for posterity. Mm. Now, here is the big boomer, yeah. Or one of them. If the Tao falls, all his own conceptions of value fall with it. Not one of them can claim any authority over other than that of the Tao. None of the values. All values get their validity from the whole Tao. Only such shreds of the Tao as he has inherited is he able to, even, let's see, only by such threads of the shreds of the Tao as he has inherited, is he enabled even to attack it. The question therefore arises what title he has to select bits of it for acceptance and to reject others. For if the bits he rejects have no authority, neither have those he retains. If what he retains is valid, then what he rejects is equally valid too.
Right?
He can't pick and choose on this. Huh?
That makes some sense.
Okay.
No.
Good. Something makes some sense.
I think it's true.
Okay. Yeah. The innovator, for example, rates high the claims of posterity. He cannot get any valid claim for posterity out of instinct, as he's shown already, in the modern sense, or in the modern sense of reason. The modern sense, the ancient sense of reason, included the acceptance of the Tao. But now we got a different sense of reason, and we chucked that out. And so with that modern sense, we cannot get to any real value. He is really deriving our duty to posterity from the Tao. Our duty to do good to all men is an axiom of practical reason. And our duty to do good to our descendants is a clear deduction from it. To do good to all men is an axiom of the Tao, and then we deduce from that the duty to do good to our descendants. But then, in every form of the Tao, which has come down to us, side by side with the duty to children and descendants, lies the duty to parents and ancestors. By what right do we reject one and accept the other? Again, the innovator may place economic values first. To get people fed and clothed is a great end. In pursuit of it, scruples about justice and good faith may be set aside. The Tao, of course, agrees with him about the importance of getting people fed and clothed. Unless the innovator were himself using the Tao, he could never have learned of such a duty. But side by side with it, in the Tao, lie those duties of justice and good faith, which he is ready to debunk. What is his warrant? How can he do this? How can he accept one and reject the other? He may be a jingoist, a racialist, an extreme of a jingoist is a guy who they used to talk about the newspapers that were American newspapers in the American Civil War. Jingoism were speaking for war against those terrible, you know, Cubans who were picking on America, you know, and so forth. They tried to, propagandists, and so forth. Maybe a jingoist, a racialist, an extreme nationalist who maintains that the advancement of his people is the object to which all else ought to yield. But no kind of factual observation and no appeal to instinct will give him a ground for this opinion. You're not going to find factual observation or an appeal to instinct that is going to support your accepting one piece of the Tao rather than another. You accept it all or none. If you want to be rational. Once more, he is in fact deriving it from the Tao, a duty to our kin because they are our own kin. is a part of the traditional morality, the Tao. Now here, just box this, but side by side with it in the Tao and limiting it. Side by side and limiting lie the inflexible demands of justice and the rule that we, that in the long run, all men are our brothers. Whence comes the innovator's authority to pick and choose? Since I can see no answer to these questions, I draw the following conclusions. Now, up to here, besides Don's page, is there any problem? Besides that page, which I need to get some fresh air before I can talk about some more.
Yeah.
Okay?
So what? I can't make any connections with all this stuff.
Which now? With?
All of it. This whole chapter.
This whole chapter. Why is he taking so much time?
Yeah, with the instincts and the tail. The Tao.
Mm-hmm.
I can't connect it with anything, so it's hard to understand it.
Okay. That the... The Tao tells us what is to be valuable, be valued, okay? And if we don't value those things that it tells us to be valuable, we're defective if we're within the Tao. If we're outside the Tao, we can never get out of bed. If we want to be rational, we can never get out of bed. Nothing is going to get us out. Reason isn't going to get us out. Any of that. He's placing us. He's saying that there is a place to be, and that's in the Tao. Right? We can't reject it. We reject it. We reject all value. We reject a part of it. We reject all value. If we're going to be logical. Now, that's, you understand, right? That's what he's saying. Do you think it's true? No, why not?
I don't know.
On what grounds? See, he's talked about the arguments against it. See, up to now, he's talked about the arguments against it. There's one more argument against the Tao that he deals with in the last chapter. But if we want to be reasonable, and we also want to say that that one ought to do something, there's a valuable thing to do, we can't get it unless we refer to the Tao. We can't refer to a part of the Tao as saying having value. We can't rationally take one part and reject another part. If you reject any part, you reject your own value. You wipe out your own value too. So you got to take the whole thing.
But we can't encompass it all either.
Taking what? Encompass.
We can't ever take in the whole Tao.
We can't take in, but we can be within.
We can't even accept the whole thing.
What do you mean? We can't accept the whole Tao.
But taking one part, accept the rest of it.
That you want.
Well, I'm not sure accept is the word that I want either, but
yeah.
But the idea that if we... Okay, I just... That reject isn't the thing that I disagree with. So what you're saying is still okay.
Well, is it?
I mean, it's if you're talking about rejecting a part of the Tao, I agree with that. That you can't reject part of the Tao without it rejecting all. But you do accept part of the Tao without being able to accept all of it, don't you?
No.
Can you accept all of it? You've got all of Confucius and Plato and Aristotle and everybody else in there, and you accept all of that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. Mm-hmm. You can't accept it all.
What do you mean? Accept it as a proper attitude? Accepting it as a proper attitude?
You can't accept it as a proper attitude. But
what? No, you don't mean accept then. You're trying to say something else.
Yeah, probably. Never mind.
No, you are trying to say something else, and I think it's pretty important.
What
and it's to the relevance of this thing, isn't it? So how what?
How do you know what's part of a Tao and what isn't?
Well,
how do you know?
There's a whole bunch in the back here.
But John, some of it goes so much, if you're a Chinese, if you're if you're Chinese, you're not, you don't go as far as a Christian or as the Jew in some of your beliefs of values, right?
No, but the you really don't get.
But I think I'm talking about distinctions within the Tao, which
there are
to do with whether or not you live in the Tao.
Living in the Tao is accepting that you're defective if you do not have the attitude toward things that the Tao says. You are defective.
How do you know what the Tao says?
The Tao says, well, we've got, there are many different statements of the Tao. Every culture has one. There's a Christian one, a Jewish one. See? And if you don't, if your own attitudes do not conform to those statements of the Tao, to where you prize those statements, those are the valuable attitudes to have, but not just the ones from say the Jewish tradition, but the other ones from the Plato and Aristotle and so forth, conceptions of the Tao.
What did you just say about accepting the Tao being knowing you're defective? Well, can you repeat that for us?
I don't know if I can.
I don't know.
But you accept the Tao, and your situation becomes something. You can't, in a sense, have value without it. Accepting the Tao.
You can't have value without.
You're kidding yourself if you say that what you do is valuable unless you accept the whole Tao. So what are you saying?
And to accept.
You're kidding yourself. You may be better than your principles. You know, because some of the Tao is rubbed off on you. He's just talked about that. You may have gotten some borrowed things, like the innovator is borrowing, borrowing values from the Tao and using that to attack the Tao. He's saying
that's
that.
That's what all that instinct stuff is?
That's part of it. That instincts are important and that inform us. That would be something that's from, I suppose, in the Tao somewhere too.
Then did you also say that you can't accept the Tao without knowing that you're defective?
Well, once you accept the Tao, you know something about yourself. Right? You're defective. How defective?
But it's okay to be defective.
No, it's not okay to be defective. It's wrong. Wrong. It's not, what do you say? It's not, yeah, it's wrong.
It's bigger than you are.
It sure is. I mean, you don't get it inside you, you get inside it.
Right, okay.
You get inside it, and what happens to you inside it? Okay. Lewis is doing something, you're kind of odd here. I mean, if you want to have what you do be valuable, you can't have it outside the Tao. You get inside the Tao and you realize something about yourself. You aren't doing the valuable things. You don't have the valuable attitudes. Your attitudes are in disharmony a great deal of the time. You're wrong inside the Tao. And yet you have to face what's right. You can't turn away. You can't turn away. You're inside the Tao. You can't make it go away. You can't pick a few. You're in a situation where you're on one side, you've got the, on one side you have the duty to your kin, and on the other the inflexible demand of justice. And then you've got all men are our brothers. And then you've got the 9-foot guy jumping through the window to rape your wife. And then you've got what? duty to kin, and violation of what's right, what I should do. I should That's my brother. I just hit him over the head with the chair. You know. It's a you can't be right outside the Tao.
Right,
I don't know if I want to say that. Let me think. You can't be right outside the Tao. You can't be right outside the Tao. Outside the Tao, right is a meaningless concept. Okay, according to what we've gone through. Inside the Tao, are you right?
No, but you know you're wrong.
You know you're wrong. In how many ways are you wrong? Well, no. You do one thing, but you've got demands. The Tao demands that you respond in accordance to the Tao. And yet, you can't respond in a harmonious way with all the demands of the Tao, and yet the demands of the Tao are there. And they don't go away, and you cannot put them away. Because if you put one away, you wipe out the whole thing. So you stand there and face those demands and meet very few of them. And to realize that you are defective. And you can't do anything but face that, see, in the Tao. What I want to do doesn't have anything to do with it, does it? Yeah, that's where you are. Now, that is the bell for supper. He starts there on 56. He starts there on 56, and that's where we're going to pick it up. But here's something to go off on. We were in that situation. Say, okay, there's nothing outside the Tao of value. We want our lives to be, is what we do, to be valuable, right? To do the right thing. Outside the Tao, it's a meaningless idea. So we've got to be inside. So move this inside. That's where the only place there is any value is inside. You get inside the Tao, and you're defective. And it hurts. And you want to get out, because it's a painful situation, because it's demand, 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 right? All the time. And it hurts. And how do we respond to that? We come up with a new ideology on 56. We purport new systems, as we now call them, ideologies, all consist of fragments of the Tao, arbitrarily wrenched from their context in the whole and then swollen to madness in their isolation. Yet still owing to the Tao and to it alone, such validity as they have. Okay. We take one thing and we pull it, don't we? We'll take one, individual freedom. We'll get that sucker out of the Tao. It's valuable, and we'll run with it. Now that's just because it's so painful in there. He's saying you can't do that. His other image, and we'll talk about that tonight, but his other image is pulling. The Tao is like a tree. Each of the statements is like a branch. We break off a branch and run with it, saying that we have got, this is, you know, this is it. And it withers and dies. I thought I'd read just one passage from the, you know, from the Gospels, and then we'll leave it. Okay? And it does, I think, establish some of the relevancy. And it's, do not imagine that I have come to abolish the law. Do not imagine that I have come to abolish the law. Jesus is saying this. Do not imagine that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish but to complete them. I tell you solemnly, till heaven and earth disappear, not one dot, one little stroke shall disappear from the law until its purpose is achieved. Therefore the man who infringes even one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same, one who infringes on any of these, the least of these commandments of the law, and teaches others to do the same, will be considered the least in the kingdom of heaven.
And where is that from?
It's from Matthew chapter 5, verse 17 and 18 and 19. And the rest of that is, but the man who keeps them and teaches them will be considered great in the kingdom of heaven. But the point is that, and one of the reasons we don't talk about Christianity or Christ or gospel or whatever, is that we use it many times to insulate ourselves from this passage. I think we can misuse the gospel. Nothing that the gospel has to say is going to take away one bit of what he's saying about the Tao. The gospel doesn't do that. This is again that reality which is beneath philosophy. This is talking about that reality which is beneath theology. I'll just read it one more time. Do not imagine that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish but to complete them. I tell you solemnly, till heaven and earth disappear, not one dot, not one little stroke shall disappear from the law until its purpose is achieved. Therefore the man who infringes even one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be considered the least in the kingdom of heaven. The man who keeps them and teaches them will be considered great in the kingdom of heaven. So that's some of the significance, I think, of this. He's telling us what that one word that Christ uses there is. Okay? And he's elaborating on that one word that Christ uses there. That one thing which will not be erased, will not go away, remains a reality. Situation. And we forget that. We forget that as Christians many times, and we shouldn't, because that's what Jesus thinks of the law, what he said there. Well, that question that you began with, Sarah, and we're going to, is continued right now through the rest of this chapter. What is the point here to all this? The precepts of the Tao or the law stand side by side and limiting. Stand side by side and limiting the law. Okay? The different precepts of the law are to be taken as a whole. And whereas I want to say that take one value from the Tao, one precept from the Tao, and say that's it. That's the one. That's what I have to be, do and be to have do the right thing, do the valuable thing. The Tao won't let you do that. You can't just grab the one. You have to be in relationship with the whole thing. You can't break the Tao apart. You shouldn't. And most of us have played, whether we have articulated the innovator's arguments, the innovator's argument that first that that's a bunch of sort of old traditional stuff and we're going to come up with a reasonable values. Or we're going to come up with real instinctual values, or we're going to do something like that. Whether we've given those arguments or not, we have played the role and do play the role as innovators. And because the main thing that the innovator does is pick and choose. Pick and choose. And that we all do. We tend to do that when we face the law. We tend to pick and choose. This one I'll go with. A person whose chemistry or whatever makes them rather quiet will tend to pick patience as the most important virtue. Okay? It's one which there is easier for them. Okay? Patience. Someone else will emphasize some other precept of the law. We will take something like liberty and say that's what we it's the most important. And in the process of achieving liberty, wreck equality and fraternity. Well, we'll take equality. Precepts of the law relate to that. And in trying to be equal to everybody and make everybody equal, we take away their liberty, take away their fraternity. That all men should be brothers. And trying to emphasize that, we take away people's freedom. Take away meaningful equality. We tend to want to pick and choose. Now why do we pick and choose? Whether we give those arguments or not, most of us aren't precise enough mentally yet, myself included, to come up with those arguments in a very articulate way. As Lewis has actually been very articulate in giving these people's arguments. And I can start to recognize an awful lot of these guys' arguments and things that I've said and done and so forth. He says, those arguments don't work. Whence comes the innovator's authority to pick and choose? In the feeling that I got just growing up somehow, where did I get the authority to pick and choose? What new has been discovered that can enable me to pick and choose? Lewis answers that question on the 55 on the bottom. I can see no answer to these questions. I can see no answers to the question, what allows the man to pick and choose? And so I draw the following conclusions. This thing which I have called for convenience the Tao, which others may call natural law or traditional morality or the first principles of practical reason, or the first platitudes, these are all different names for this, is not one among a series of possible systems of value. Is not one among a series of possible systems of value. It is the sole source of all value judgments. It is the sole source of all value judgments. We chase back what is the, where do you get that value judgment? We end up with a Tao, and we end up seeing that that value judgment, which is important one to make, statement of what kind of attitude is valuable, is sitting there side by side among many, many other value judgments which also relate to us, our situation, and that those other value judgments limit us in keep us, their demands keep us from going along with a single value and thinking we've done the right thing. Now he says it's the sole source of all value judgments. If it is rejected, all value is rejected. All value is rejected. If any value is retained, it is retained. If you retain one of these values, if you're logical, you'll have to retain them all. If you reject one of these values, if you extend your logic, the grounds which you have rejected one of the values, or two or three or four or five of the values, that same logic destroys the whole thing. If you accept one, the same logic makes you accept the whole thing. If any value is retained, it is retained. The effort to refute it and raise a new system of value in its place is self-contradictory. You can't do it. You can't refute it and raise a new system of value because all systems of value are related there. There has never been and never will be a radically new judgment of value in the history of the world. And these are pretty strong statements. There never has been and never will be a radically new judgment of value in the history of the world. What purport to be new systems, as they now call them, ideologies, all consist of fragments from the Tao itself, arbitrarily wrenched from their context in the whole. The ideologies usually based on one value, which was in context and limited. It had made things difficult to have to see, to balance 10 values. And one of those values has been taken out of the context and it's been centered in a new ideology. Arbitrarily wrenched from their context in the whole and then swollen to madness in their isolation. Swollen to madness in their isolation. That is a haunting, those are haunting lines for me. A bit like Tournier's, those, each of the spirits that lead to isolation that he talks about, formalism, or the parliamentary spirit, independence, assertion of independence, possessiveness, just demands, all those have, there are Tao statements somehow related to all those things. Yet when we break one of those, we break that freedom away, independence, we break that away, that very value is swollen to madness in isolation from the rest of the Tao, and in a sense that's almost a good image for me if I'm doing that. wrench them away from the context and the whole, and then swollen to madness in their isolation, yet still owing to the Tao and to it alone such validity as they possess. The only validity that that precept, the one precept that I take, is derived from the Tao. If my duty to my parents is a superstition, then so is my duty to posterity. If justice is a superstition, then so is my duty to my country or my race. If the pursuit of scientific knowledge is a real value, then so is conjugal fidelity, marital fidelity. The rebellion of new ideologies against the Tao is a rebellion of the branches against the tree. If the rebels could succeed, they would find that they had destroyed themselves. You take, again, you rip that branch off the Tao, and then a branch has a resemblance to the Tao, doesn't it? A little twig looks like a tree, and away you go with it. You run away with it, but separated from the source, it dies. If left on the tree, that tree can bear some fruit. You know? It can live and bear fruit. You break the branch away, there's no fruit. Fruit, it's sterile. It's a sterile freedom. Whereas if it was on the tree, it was a fertile freedom. See? It is an awfully good analogy there. The human mind has no more power of inventing a new value than of imagining a new primary color. Now that's hard. We don't like to say that we don't have any power of inventing a new value. Come on, this goes against all my suppositions of progress, doesn't it? Okay. Yeah, Carla.
I don't know how the old values came about. That's what bugs me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. He does talk there, and he says whether this implies a supernatural origin of the Tao or not, I'm not concerned with that question here. Fact is that we face it. You can go back to every single culture of the world, thousands of miles apart, and they had it. They have a Tao. They have an objective reality. They have attitudes which must be met for them, for the tribe, a member of the tribe, to be in harmony with the way, the kind of thing the universe is and the kind of things we are. Now, there are some differences, but one of the amazing things is that given all the cultures, all the thousands of cultures that we've had, especially before we've had mobility, where you could have a different culture in each valley. You know, the guys from one valley would not go over and see the other guys. The guys that the 12-fingered people up in the mountains, the Pyrenees Mountains, who've been up there so long, you know. Their whole number system is 12. They all have 12 fingers. You've got a 12-digit number system. Okay. They've got a Tao. 90% of that Tao is the same, or more. The same as it is in London. The same as in China. 90%. At least. You know, that's an amazing thing. If you think that, well, where did it come from? Boy, when you start to realize that, it is even more eerie. The New Zealand people who've been down so isolated that they're back 10,000 years, I think. Isn't that Stone Age? Mm-hmm. Pure Stone Age, where there's absolutely nothing? What, 10,000 years? They've got a Tao. 90% of their attitudes. Same. Passed on this handful of people, a race of 100 people, civilization of 100 people. An Indian they found out in California.
Mm-hmm.
Is she? That sucker had a doll. And that doll was so, the similarities between Ishi's understanding, the attitudes, proper attitudes to be in harmony with the kind of place the universe is and the kind of people we are, was amazingly similar. Now, that's true up to the point of our creating ideologies. And now we start getting really different. So you're breaking down the coherence of the Tao in the last hundreds of years we've been involved in breaking down the similarities. So there are real differences. The Indians, they couldn't figure out what we were doing. What are you doing? You guys are for death. We're for life. You guys are for, seems like the thing that you want to happen everywhere you go is death. You know, how did you get there? It was a real puzzler. We were a real puzzler to the Indians in this country. Huh?
We still are. Still.
Well, it depends on how far they've gotten away from the Tao. In this civilization, you've taken on our ideologies, most of them. So they've got the same sickness, same problem. It seems like it's fatalistic to think that we can't invent a new value. That doesn't it something kind of gives you the squirmies?
Yeah.
Well, come on now, you're trying to limit me. You know? But then when you think of the analogy, a new primary color, you know, how do you do something like that? How do you invent a new primary color? We've discovered that there are many different rays that birds see different colors than we do, because their rods and cones are set up differently. But for human beings, there are no new primary colors. You know, it's a huge spectrum. You know, of waves that goes far beyond what we see. But so what? Invent a new color. Put a new sun in the sky. And a new sky to move it in. That we can't do. There are certain primary realities that we face. Again, the question, what have we discovered that makes us think that this isn't so anymore? Then he meets that. He anticipates questions all the way through here. Does this mean then that no progress in our perceptions of value can ever take place? Does this mean then that no progress in our conceptions of perceptions of value can ever take place? Our perceptions is where the progress is. That we are bound down forever into an unchanging code given once for all. What a horrible feeling that is. Since I've been raised in certain ideologies. What a horrible feeling it is that I'm bound down forever to an unchanging code given once for all. And is it, in any event, possible to talk of obeying what I call the Tao? And okay, if this is so, is it possible to talk of obeying what I call the Tao? Is it possible to obey these demands? No. Can we do it? You gonna make it? Nobody pinched Karen. Good. Oop, oop. Yeah. And that's a question. I don't know if you've been, has this been a question that's sort of building in your own head?
Yeah.
No, what? Wait a minute. How?
Yeah.
Can especially?
You talk about recognizing, the word now.
You can sit on something uncomfortable.
Your own imperfection inside the Tao, when you're recognizing your own imperfection.
Yeah.
That was a word, or a different word in it.
There you go.
And then you think, well, gosh, I'm so imperfect, how can I ever obey things inside of it?
Yeah. Yeah. And can I? And in some ways, you start to see a question about this. How can I go two ways at once? How can I go in two directions at the same time? Yeah. Two directions at the same time. How many demands? How can I meet him? But what then should my response to that be? If is that frustration? But as that gets more, is this reality gets? It's almost like it's squeezing us. Okay, we're getting squeezed. See. And Lewis has already wiped out the escape routes. You know? She's, that's gone, that's gone, that's gone, that's gone. You want to live in a meaningful universe? You live in the Tao. He's wiped out all these ways to get outside of it. And you start to see it squeeze on you. And then we read the statement that I read here. Not one jot, one stroke of the Tao will be erased. That doesn't go away. So we can't use, in a sense, we can't use the gospel as an escape route to escape from the Tao. That isn't what, I mean, I think that's what that passage says, isn't it? It's not going to go away. And I don't want you to go away either. I want you to live right in the middle of that. Now what we can ask, and we won't ask in terms of giving an answer right now, but it's going to be significant. What in the heck then is the gospel about? Okay? If I've got to stand in this place that is squeezing me like that. He says, is it in any event possible to talk about obeying what I call the Tao? If we lump together as I have the traditional moralities of East and West, the Christian, the pagan, the Jew, shall we not find many contradictions and some absurdities? I admit all of this. Somebody had asked this question earlier today, or yesterday. I can't even tell anymore. Last year? Who knows? I admit all this. Some criticism, some removal of contradictions, even some real development is required. Okay? It's required. He admits all this. Some criticism, some removal of contradictions, even some real development is required. But there are two very different kinds of criticism. And he has to tell us that before he goes on.
That's... That's what, like, one of the big questions that's been coming up through all this has been, okay, but especially that page before where he says, whence comes the innovator's authority to pick and choose? Well, we don't necessarily have that authority, but we do have to make choices between things. And so how you do that within the Tao is a big question.
Well, making choices within the Tao and making choices outside the Tao.
Well, those are two very different things.
Yeah, the one is picking and choosing, and you don't pick and choose inside. Pick and choose is sort of a shopping term.
But it seems that way.
Well, I don't, yeah, well, we'll go on and see how this choice works in the Tao. But Okay, two kinds of criticism then. Okay, two kinds of advancements. Theorist about language may approach his native tongue, as it were, from the outside, regarding its genius as a thing that has no claim on him, and advocating wholesale alterations of its idioms and spelling in the interests of commercial convenience or scientific accuracy. That is one thing. That's one kind of criticism. A great poet who has loved and been well nurtured in his mother tongue may also make great alterations in it, but his changes of the language are made in the spirit of the language itself. He works from within. The language which suffers the change has also inspired the changes. That which suffers the changes has also itself inspired the changes.
That's what we were talking about on Thursday, is the vision thing. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking in half sentences. That's what we were talking about on Thursday, when we were talking about, you know, when you have a vision to write, and then you write, and that speaks to the vision, and the vision speaks to what you're writing, and it flows back and forth, like with wood sculpting. That's the same thing he's saying, isn't it? It's suffered, but it's also inspired the changes. So if there's a real flow there.
Suffering and that works with the wood carving image better than the language one. But the thing that is changed is also causing the change to happen, inspiring the change. The sculpture is telling you what piece to take out next. See? How to change the form. But it's doing the instructing. And it's suffering the changes. And that's a different thing. As different as the works of Shakespeare are from basic English. It is the difference between alteration from within and alteration from without, between organic change and surgical change. The difference between organic change and surgical change. And that's the best word. Those are the best words. Organic, on the one hand, a change from within. As the plant of corn matures and is changed from within, or the surgical, which lops off, changes from without, changes the plant from without, and cuts off parts of it. In some ways, you've got differences. Well, right up on the top and put a question mark beside it. Evolution and conditioning. Evolution and conditioning. Growth of man. Reduction of man. This is two columns. Complexer man. Simpler man. It'd be more complex man. I'm sorry. More complex man. Simpler man. Now the sense that you've got some stuff in Tournier on that, I think, about the theory of the principle of entropy in material, that everything wears down and gets more simple. And then in biological, material change is that entropy in it. The principle of entropy, and everything starts becoming more and more like seeking a similar level. But the principle in biology is that as time goes on, more and more complexity, more and more difference. Now, that is not so much, we have talked about conditioners before, and we're going to talk about conditioners coming up. And these, I want you to think back when we're doing that to this sense of organic and surgical. In the same way, the Tao admits development from within. There's a difference between a real moral advance and a mere innovation. A real moral advance and a mere innovation. From the Confucian, do not do to others what you would not like them to do to you. To do as you would be done by is a real advance. Okay, is the advance clear? Is the organic change of that clear? And that's not taking away from the previous statement, it's the growth, the maturity of that previous statement. It's different than, you know, it's a different statement, but it includes the previous statement. It includes the Confucian statement and has grown bigger to include some other things that the Confucian statement didn't. Question?
I don't know if I can bring it up. It's in reference to God.
Bring it up and see.
Well, is it wrong to stop at Christianity? Are we advancing beyond that?
Where? In what?
Like Confucian, a sentence changed into Christianity. We advanced, and now today, could we read maybe like the Third Testament? That book that's come out, like in addition to the New Testament in the way, could we read writings that have been advanced upon the New Testament?
We've been writing the Third Testament ever since the New Testament was, you know, put together. I mean, in a sense, the Gospel is the Second Testament. And we've been writing the Testament ever since. I think new understandings that we do, individuals certainly develop in their understandings of what they thought think the law is, and I suppose that individuals' understandings of what the Gospel is change a lot. You know? Mm-hmm. Now, I wouldn't want to fear that, because I'm very glad that I don't have the same understanding of Christianity I did when I was 21. I'm real glad. Really, I am. Yeah. I'm glad it's changed. And yet, that change is not different than the principles. But it's grown and grown. See? Become clearer and clearer. But it certainly has changed. So my understanding does change. I think theologians' understandings change, develop. And then we try to see whether this safe statement is what we call heresy, or if it is an internal, you know, it's not so much a change, but it's an understanding. The understanding of, say, the Gospel can change from time to time. And the question always is it heresy? In my own life, every time I've come to something which people have said is really important and an insight for them in the Gospel, I've been scared to death that it's heretical. I mean, just tremendous fear and trembling to even say some of the ideas, and saying them, and then feel, that's right. You know. It gives you that feeling. You're out on the edge of, you know that you can go too far. But we ask the question then always, is it heretical? There are heresies that have been down through the ages. What were most of the heresies? One part broken off and emphasized too much. One part of the whole broken off and magnified, swollen to madness and isolation from the rest of the gospel or the law, whatever. he would say here that he's not saying that the law, you know, the law is always growing. The Tao is always growing. The Tao is always the same, too. I mean, that sense of same, and it's always the same. It's always growing. And it's always the same. It's a paradox type situation. Because if there was an organic change, there's an organic change from corn when it's this big to corn when it's this big. It's still the same. It's different. It's the same. It's different each day. It's the same, but it's different. It becomes more and more what it was intended to be.
Wow, that's really neat
way of looking at that. Yeah, but that, and I think it's more to the sense of change is that the law is inside us, becoming more and more. You know, we see it more and more as what it was intended to be. So in a sense, if we thought that was the law before, and now maybe we're changing our minds, did the law change? Or did we change? Reaching. Okay. This. Do as you would be done by. It's sort of up against the wall, isn't it? I mean, it's sort of like he reached the end of that particular precept. Where do you go from there? Well, I think you can go one place, do as you have been done by. Maybe you can push it out to there. But we're in 32, so we don't know about that. Maybe in 34. We can say that, but in 32 A.D., we say, do as you would be done by. The morality of Nietzsche is a mere innovation. The first, and I wish I knew more about Nietzsche, I don't. And I just, I can't talk about Nietzsche, I can't. Can you?
Do you know, is he trying to step out of the
Tao? Yeah, it's an ideology, a new ideology. He wrote Superman. Okay, taking certain things, but I have no...
When is this 20th century person?
Nietzsche, 19th. Isn't it 19th? Yeah, 1800s.
So. He talks from the Christian... of reference, but he doesn't speak in Christianity.
No.
He's not the one that talks about the, war and violence as being really, or is that someone else, I think, a really important part of people, and you can't.
I can't speak to that. I really can't. And I'm always embarrassed too, because almost everybody who's ever I've talked to says, "Well, you know, get around to Nietzsche," and I haven't read him. You haven't read Nietzsche? you know, just you've got to. One reason, mainly because he's a poet. You know, Nietzsche is a poetic philosopher. Yeah. Very poetic philosopher, and I've heard passages that he's written that are just, you know, he's really got the image. He's another one of these, well, guys like Kierkegaard is a poetic philosopher. Plato was, of course. Plato was a first poetic. Okay. First is an advance because no one who did not admit the validity of the old maxim could see reason. The first is an advance, this example that he just gave above. Because no one who did not admit the validity of the old maxim could see reason for accepting the new one. And anyone who accepted the old would at once recognize the new as an extension of the same principle. The same principle is involved. Now there's where we're talking about there was a principle there, a vision there, that the principle reflected. But the first statement is a verbal equivalence. It is an attempt at a verbal equivalence to the vision. The second is a better, closer statement, verbal equivalent to that same vision. See? And anyone who saw the first statement, do not do to others as you would not like them to do to you, who had felt that nonverbal principle, recognized it, and then tried to say it, you know, bam, and he came up with, do not do to others what you would not like them to do to you, would upon seeing do as you would be done by, as that's much closer in equivalence to that principle. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that before, but a closer verbal equivalence to the vision.
So the statement in here isn't the Tao. The Tao is something that they're trying to... These are an effort to articulate the Tao?
Oh, sure. Wait a second. A good point, or a good, you know, Karen. It's a really good point. Lao Tse has a statement: the real Tao cannot be spoken. The real Tao cannot be spoken. Well, she was saying. Remember, we were saying. Trying to understand the do not do to others and what is the relationship between. And then I was saying, he says that the one who accepts the first will accept the second as an extension of the same principle. And I said, well, yeah, that's okay. That the principle behind the first statement is the same as the principle behind the second statement. And in a way, the first statement is an attempt at the verbal equivalence of that principle, or the vision of that principle, and got closer than anything else did, and so was right. And now this second statement that Christ happened to have said is do as you would be done by, is a real advance toward a closer equivalency to the vision, to the principle, and so is recognized. Many times the vision that you have, you can't reach, you know, you try to get the best equivalence you can, then somebody else comes by and says it better. In the minute you recognize it. I remember telling you, I think, about a poem that I had struggled with for years, and then I found another guy who wrote it. And it just made me, you know, there's a competitive thing. And I said, oh, you did it. You jerky. You know, you did it. And you did it. You did it. Joseph Langland, Wheel of Summer. It's a real, he's a good guy. And I struggled and struggled and struggled, and he said it. There's no point for me to write the poem. He did it. He expressed the vision better than I could do it, and he did it so definitively. There's nothing more to say about that particular vision. Wheel of Summer is the name of his poem.
Is that when you were saying that the real Tao cannot be spoken? Tao cannot be spoken. Is that also probably got like the Hindu thing where he's had that RTA, which we couldn't pronounce, ties into maybe it's unspeakable, just as the Jewish word for God was unspeakable.
Oh, like that.
That it's all beyond It's beyond our ability to put it down or to be able to define it or even name it. I wondered at that this morning, when it, or whenever it was that we were reading it.
Yeah. Okay. Don't know. It relates, and I don't want to.
Might be getting too close to it. We're not supposed to talk about.
Well, no, it relates. No, not that way, but it does. It does relate. But I think that Lao Tse, in saying that, is keeping us humble before those precepts. Even in relationship to the precept itself, you know, that this is a precept of the Tao. This is, and yet, it's not all of it. Sort of, I've said sometimes that in heaven I'll be able to say 10 things at the same time. And I'll finally be able to say the truth. In some ways, the Tao maybe has to be like that. Can't be spoken here. I don't want to go too much on that, because I'd go off into some speculation that would take me a long way from this and not get us any closer till to tomorrow. If he rejected it, if the person rejected this first principle, would have to, or if he rejected it, he would have to reject it as a super. Superfluity. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Superfluity? Is that the proper pronunciation?
Mm-hmm.
Superfluity?
Mm-hmm.
Something that went too far, not as simply heterogeneous from his own ideas of value. Okay, if a person rejected the development, rejected it because it went too far on the same path, very clearly in the same path, it went too far, rather than it being something. Woo, it being something else. Sorry about that. Being something other than the original.